This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The content shared is not a substitute for professional medical, mental health, legal, or financial advice. Please consult a qualified professional for personalized guidance or treatment. By listening, you acknowledge that the hosts and guests are not responsible for any decisions or actions you take based on this content.
Feel like a grouch, go beyond the couch, share your confessions on the Aurora Sessions.
Hello, Aurora Healing Crew. Welcome to the Aurora Sessions Beyond the Couch, where we take the stressors that come up in session and bring them into conversation beyond the couch. This is the space where real talk meets real life. Hi, everyone. This is Teresa here, the founder of Aurora Sun Counseling, a group private practice providing psychotherapy for clients in New Jersey, Virginia, and Pennsylvania. Today, we're going to switch things up a little bit. My best friend of all times, my soul sister, Malakshi Roy Chattery, is sitting next to me today, and she's actually going to be asking questions to me about what she thinks the audience might want to know about me, as well as any other curious questions. I figured this would be a great time, and who better than my best friend that knows me so well to ask me these questions, in case you guys are wondering about what got me started doing the podcast and the private practice. So welcome, Mo.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I love to brag about Mo. Mo is short. Everybody that knows her calls her Mo, and I call her Momo, and we call her Auntie Momo. And she was my maid of honor, also Mo. So we love Mo. Mo, Malakshi Roy Chattery, is a PharmD, which means she has her doctorates in pharmacy and also her JD, and is the head of international regulatory advertising and promotion for AbbVie. Can you tell us a little bit more about your role before we switch roles and you ask me questions?
Sure. So basically, what I and my team do is we make sure that pharmaceutical companies follow regulations mm-hmm. when they're making any type of advertising and promotion. So any commercials you see on TV, any social media posts, even what sales reps say, maybe even what you hear on some investor calls, we make sure that everything that is said by the company, about the products, protect patients, protect people, protect providers, and protect our employees too. And it sounds complicated, but it's actually a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to be exposed to different concepts, new creative marketing concepts every day. I love my job. A lot of fun.
Mo's job, I always think, is the perfect job for her because she's also a creative person. She's also a singer. She is in many other extracurricular activities, including one. What are you a part of?
Right now, I'm part of APEDA, which is the Asian Pacific Islander and AC American group in East Brunswick, as well as on the board for the East Brunswick Symphony Orchestra and the Alliance for Prevention of Alcohol and Drug Abuse.
Oh, that's awesome. It's amazing how our lives are starting to intertwine.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. I always wondered after Mo got her PharmD why she needed to go back to school and get her JD. And her job is, I think, just an example of what she can do with both. She's in charge of the marketing, but also to make sure that everything is up to regs. And you need your regulatory experience.
It has to be medically accurate and then accurate from a regulation perspective too. But back to your question about why I needed my law degree, I don't know if I actually needed it, but I somehow planned this when I was 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved reading, writing, philosophy, and wanted to make sure that I somehow have an aspect of that in addition to using the medical knowledge. And I think I'm also really lucky. I envisioned I would be working with marketing or with advertising and promotion when I was 17, 18, mm-hmm. but I don't think these roles really existed as much at that time. Mm-hmm. So I got lucky that as time evolved, this became more and more of a need in pharmaceutical companies, and this job manifested itself for me.
That's great. Well, you manifested it too.
Maybe.
All right. So I'm going to hand over the mic to Mo and put myself in an uncomfortable situation. But I will do my best to be a guest on the podcast.
Okay. So this is not going to be uncomfortable at all because okay. you are so good and so smooth at interviewing people. I'm sure it's going to be the same the other way around. So wait, can I give a little background on you first?
Yes.
Okay. So Teresa and I met when we were 9 or 10 years old. Maybe you were 9. I was 10.
I think I was 10. I wanted to say 10, but I could be almost 10.
Yeah. And so we're not going to say how many years we've been friends since then. But when she first moved to my town, I saw her walking with her father. Mm-hmm. And I begged my dad, because she was the first girl I saw in the neighborhood, I begged my dad to take me to her house and introduce me to her.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that. And then we became BFFs ever since.
Yes.
And since then, we've had a few business ideas of our own when we were 10, correct. 11, 12. So I am not surprised about this empire that you've built. I think this was brewing probably since you were 10 years old. But can you tell us a little bit about our first business initiative when we were 10?
So we read, we were obsessed with the Babysitters Club. And we had a lot of kids in our neighborhood. And we decided to create our own Babysitters Club, a business in our neighborhood. So we created flyers that your dad so wonderfully printed for us, mm-hmm. made it look very official. And we put it around people's mailboxes in our neighborhood to advertise us being available to watch their children.
And we even designed the flyer ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We had our own logo.
Before any of these other apps that do it for us now.
We did it by hand.
Yes.
And then, yeah. And we even had a kid kit, right?
Yes.
That was your great idea. It was a brilliant idea. We had kid kits full of toys and books and
first aid. Yeah. Well, I hope there was first aid. Yes. And I don't know who would ever these days hire us, but our first I guess, employer, Debbie, she had her own in-home daycare, and she hired Mo and I after schools 5 days a week after school for a couple hours, and it was the perfect after-school job for us, and she believed in us. And from there, the parents at the daycare center, they hired us on the weekends to babysit. So we were little ballers in middle school. Yeah.
We were little hustlers.
Yeah.
From like 12 to 16.
Yes.
I think. Yeah. And I have very clear memories of you also negotiating for us at times, which, you know, this.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
No, but I mean, that's. Like, you know, it was a sign of how you would be as a businesswoman and an employer, even from when you were at a young age.
That's funny.
I remember you negotiating our salaries, maybe asking for an increase, negotiating hours.
Negotiating
days.
Right. Yes.
I remember being so impressed with like the crucial, difficult conversations you would have at an early age that I was scared to have.
That's how the tides have turned, because I don't like those conversations at all.
You might not like them, but you're good at them. So as your friend, I'm not surprised at how you blossomed. I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of all that you've done with with therapy and social work and this business and being the boss babe that you are. but I'm not surprised at all. Aww. But so let me ask you, at which point through all these different experiences, and we can go through those experiences mm-hmm. if you want to, but at which point did you decide you wanted to be in the therapy space?
So, like many people in the field, and I've said this before and on previous podcasts, that usually the career chooses us instead of us choosing the career. But there have been many different events in my life that I had access to a therapist to talk to me. And I just knew, and I had asked many questions. I guess I just always had a curious mind. So with those therapists, I would ask, okay, what was your degree? How long did you have to go to school? What was the process? And I just, even now, still have to map everything out. I just, that we know that's anxiety. We call it anxiety now. But I just like knowing and having a goal in place so I know what the future can look like for me. So at a young age, I knew I didn't just want to stop at my bachelor's. I wanted to get my master's in social work. And getting my master's in social work would allow me to have a variety of different roles, and including therapy.
I remember being so impressed when you did go for your master's at Fordham.
Mm-hmm.
I also have fun memories of us meeting up in New York City while
yes.
you were at Fordham.
I had one class that I had to go once a month in New York City on Wednesday. I remember this. And I planned it out. So I would meet Mo Tuesday night to go to this class on Wednesday. And then guess what? I never made it to class on Wednesday.
I'm so sorry.
It's
so
okay.
Sorry. Such a bad influence.
No, it was fine because we had crepes that day and had a nice visit. And then I went back to Jersey.
The crepery on Ludlow. That's where we would go. But I was always so amazed at your drive because you know, you're making it sound like it wasn't that big of a deal that you'd go into New York once a month, but it was actually so much work,
mm-hmm.
it was so much work on top of the work you were already doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then that commute into New York City, like how did you find the motivation to have that drive and go through so many years of schooling to get to where you are now?
Yeah. So, thank you for helping me remember that because I always forget how much work it was just to get into the city. And our classes, I love Fordham for it because it was all day on Saturday. We would start at 8 o'clock and be done at 4 o'clock. So it allowed non-traditional students who were working full time or had to work during the work week to also get their master's. So during the week, I would work in Atlantic City at a partial care program using my bachelor's degree. And then on the in-between days, so I would work there part-time and 3 days a week, 2 days a week, I would do my internship. And on Saturdays, I would go into school. And then sometimes I would even waitress for money.
I remember.
Yes. So I think it was because I knew I had to do it. And if I stopped, then I wasn't going to finish. Because I know that about myself, that I think I have a touch of probably, like everybody, a touch of ADHD. So I'll start lots of things and then not finish it if it gets boring. And I just knew I needed to keep going. Otherwise, I'd probably be waitressing. Not that that's like a negative thing, but I knew I couldn't waitress for the rest of my life. So,
and I think you don't give yourself enough credit. So yes, we all have a little bit of ADHD, but you always prioritize the things that are important. The things that are important for you, for yourself, for your family, for your career, for your employees, for your business now. So I really appreciate that about you. And I'm inspired by you.
Oh, thank you. I hope this is not going to be just a full hour of giving me accolades.
But it's true. That's what I really feel about you.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, well, I'm going to let you do more talking. So what is your favorite thing about being a therapist?
My favorite thing about being a therapist is when we get those aha moments in therapy. So we might be talking sometimes years to kind of just plant seeds. And sometimes even the clients might feel hopeless and say things like, is this even working? Like, why are things still the same? And then one day the seed just like blossoms, and then they come to session and tell me what happened, and they were so proud of themselves. And those are the moments that are just priceless, and really I should be paying them for those moments. And that's what keeps us going. It truly is rewarding.
That sounds so satisfying.
It is. It's such a treat. I feel bad that people pay us for therapy. We really do love it. Yeah.
That is such a beautiful way to put it. Now, on the flip side, what is the most difficult part about therapy?
So, yes, of course, there are really difficult parts. So when this, I tell students all the time and the young people that I didn't just walk into private practice. We all have to put in the work. We all have to work in the streets of Atlantic City, go into motels in Atlantic City. Maybe not those things specifically, but
yeah, that's starting to sound a little shady.
Yes. We had to do a lot of things that we were scared to do. But I think that what helps make us so appreciative of by the time we get to private practice. So, which is great that the license itself makes you get your hours in. And I really encourage people to get it, not only in private practice, because then you only know one industry. It's important to see all different levels of care, like inpatient, partial, intensive outpatient. And in those higher levels of care, and even now in outpatient, you're just seeing people at rock bottom a lot of times, and you are there to support them, and they are trusting you. And they have, you know, they're so vulnerable. They're exposing themselves, trusting you with their care. And I've had people that I've known that died by suicide. And as a therapist, that is just, you know, your worst nightmare. So it takes a lot of self-care and understanding. And I would say now the hardest parts are when clients are struggling and their environment itself is not maybe the best environment, and there's very little I could do for them. But the fact that they keep showing up every week and have that space to talk, I remember that I could at least provide that for them and hopefully keep planting the seeds so that one day things can change.
I love that analogy, planting seed.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think you planted the seed for me because I've gone through some very difficult years, and mm-hmm. you encouraged me to get therapy, which has been life-changing for me. So thank you for that. Do you mind if we dive a little deeper mm-hmm. into that? So I sometimes worry mm-hmm. with my therapist that mm-hmm. maybe I'm giving them secondary trauma.
Oh, gosh.
By recounting all the stories of any negative things that have happened in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that therapists worry about? Or if you do encounter, you know, I'm sure you're encountering some really horrifying, tragic stories.
Mm-hmm.
How do you protect yourself? How do you protect your mind?
As a client, please do not worry about your therapist and traumatizing your therapist. That is not something that you need
to remind myself.
Yes.
Of that.
Oh my goodness. No. And that's what makes the difference between a therapist and a friend, right? Like, it is, yes, we have a relationship, a therapeutic relationship, but it is also a transactional relationship. And we are there to help you. It's one way versus a friend, it's back and forth. So I would never want my client to worry about traumatizing me with their story. They're here for that. They're okay. here to share that. But for me, because I've been through all different levels of training and care, I have learned that great supervision for my staff is important. So I provide group supervision every other week at my practice. And even the licensed professionals meet with a supervisor once a month just to go over cases to make sure that we are providing best practice, that if they have any of their own, we call it transference or countertransference, that they need a process, that we give them the space for it. And also, a lot of people are very open that they see their own therapist too. So, and during staff meeting, I'm sure they're annoyed at this point, but in the beginning of every staff meeting, I make everybody talk about what they are doing for self-care. Practice what you preach is what we call it. And that's from our trauma-focused CBT training. So everybody has to recount what they did this month for self-care. So we really encourage that because if we're not, if we don't have all our spoons, we can't give spoons to people. And it can be harmful to the clients too.
That's brilliant that you do that with your team. And I might steal that mm-hmm. and use that for my team, even though we're in a completely different yes. industry. Uh-huh. I think it's important to make sure that everybody is, you know, doing that level of self-care. Mm-hmm. So on the topic of self-care,
yes,
what do you do for self-care?
So it's actually been almost a year to the day. I have to look it up because I was going to post something for my one-year anniversary for hot yoga. I am so in love with hot yoga right now. I had to take a little break because I had eyebrow touch up. So,
which looks great.
Thank you. Thank you. So, but I could go back this coming week. And I just love being in another environment where you are forced to use mindfulness skills. It's 105 degrees in there. So you have to concentrate on your breathing and I like that an instructor is telling me what to do versus in my job, I'm constantly giving. So in yoga, I'm receiving. So after yoga, my favorite part is walking out and feeling the fresh air. So that's my favorite part.
So this is going to be the one time that I disagree with you. Mm. I love that mm-hmm. you do hot yoga. But I cannot do it.
Yes.
I remember my first or second class of hot yoga, I had to coach myself to get out of there.
Yes.
I had to keep reminding myself, you're an adult. You can yeah. choose to leave if you want
yes.
to.
Yes. No. And yes, it's not for everybody. I have a friend who has a heart condition. She cannot do that. Like, it is not for everybody. And, but find
high
something.
High heat and I don't yeah. do well together.
Yes. Yeah.
But I love that it works
yes.
for you.
Yes.
I love that you are focused on moving your body. And I was also very impressed with the dragon boating mm-hmm. that you took up a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit about that too and how that impacts your mind and your feelings on a day-to-day basis?
So in our town, they are called Wicked Warriors. And right now, there's over 300 women from our town that are in it.
Wow.
So it's all women run organization, nonprofit. And every year they raise money. They pick a nonprofit to raise money. And it's like $25,000+ that we give to each organization like every year. And so first, of course, I'm prone to FOMO. And when my kids were young, they were this organization was called something else, and it was difficult. I wasn't able to do it. But now when I put my name on the wait list, so when they reached out to me again, I was like, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to prioritize it. And because it's really non-committal, it's three practices in May and one race. If you want to do more, you could do more. I've done more, but this year I decided I'm just going to do one race, and I'm at peace with that. But yes, that first year was killer because I've never moved my body like that before. And my captain, who's also going to be on my podcast, Danielle, she's scary. They said that she's the spin bike instructor. Like, she used to be, and that's all you have to know. That describes a person.
I think I need her in my life.
Right. Yes. So but she's really not scary, but I was afraid of her. So I did everything that she told me to do. And
sounds like a good scary.
Yes.
Like, really motivates you.
You need that.
Yes.
Yes. And of course, we all say this is for fun, but come race day, we are so competitive and we get so salty and come up with 1,000 reasons why another boat in our own organization beat us.
Sounds like healthy competition.
Yes. Yes. And it's great woman power too, being around all the, I always said it's amazing that they can gather 300 people together on one day when sometimes we take months and years to just two people to get together. But they are every year able to get over 300 people in Philadelphia for a dragon boat race.
That's incredible.
Yes.
That's a real accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So you're involved in so many activities, and I've been listening to your previous podcasts as well. I had no idea that you were so involved in so many of the school activities as well. Can you talk a little bit about that? And also, how does therapy play into, you know, the decisions you make in those activities, and also like how you deal with individuals in those organizations?
So
you're involved in a lot.
Well, I'm not involved in home and school anymore because I opened the practice the same year I first became president of home and school, and it was too much. And like I said, I first accepted the position of president of home and school, and then decided to open my practice because I was like, "Oh, I could do things."
Yeah,
and then it exploded, and I couldn't give the commitment I wanted to for home and school. So I was actually probably more involved in home and school before I became president, in trying to sell pies, which I think is hilarious because it's very like Stepford Wifey.
Yeah, I never imagined you baking a pie.
Oh, I'm not baking.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, no. I was just...
I imagine you doing a lot of other things.
No, we contracted with a bakery.
Okay,
yeah,
got it.
And we just organized it. And there was always pies missing, which stressed me out because... or the wrong pies left to give to people. Can you imagine making those phone calls and text messages to...
I think there are worse problems
to
have.
Not here. not in our town. So these were the stressors. So yes, on one hand, by day, I was stressed and like crying with my clients about like devastating stuff. But then real life was like, oh my gosh, like... they needed a coconut custard pie and I have a fruit pie in front of me. What am I supposed to tell this person without like paying myself for the pies, which I'm pretty sure I did.
That's probably what I would end up doing too.
Yeah. But as far as the good thing is, I don't need to have my therapist communications, like as far as like hat and what I say, I could be more free when I have like Mom Teresa on versus therapist Teresa. And, but I do, when people do get upset over things that we think might be trivial, as a therapist, it's easier to kind of put yourself in their shoes, just to remind yourself that somebody's probably going through something and they're just taking it out on these pies.
I've noticed that about you. You're very good at relating to people and understanding where they're coming from, even if they're having a bad day, especially when they're having a bad day. Like you know, give them a lot of grace and try to understand where they're coming from and what experiences they're having.
I've learned, though, because I used to give people excuses all the time, and a coworker told me, we can understand why they're acting that way, but that doesn't mean that it's okay that they're treating us that way. Mm. And that really, really resonated with me, because I would allow certain behaviors to continue because I understood where they were coming from and I was empathetic. But once I realized, no, just because I understand doesn't mean I have to accept it, that changed some things for me.
That's a revelation for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to replay this part of the podcast
yes.
and listen to it like a mantra.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So do you mind if I get a little personal?
Sure. That's why I have you here.
So I know you encounter a lot of difficult situations
yes.
while being a therapist. Do you incorporate that or keep that from impacting how you are as a mother, as a wife, as a friend? How does that impact your personal life, and how do you make sure you have the right boundaries up?
It's hard, especially during COVID. The kids were home. They were virtual learning. I switched jobs, going from working for an insurance company to providing therapy. My husband and I was resentful at first that he had to go into work every day, but I joked that that probably saved our marriage that he wasn't home, because I do know people who were stuck for 4 years together. And still home, because they don't have to go back to work. But
a huge adjustment.
Yes, yes. So I was trying to, we didn't know what COVID was. I was so sad we had to cancel our Disney trip. I know, first world problems. On March 13th, we had to cancel our Disney trip. The kids went to bed thinking they were going to Disney the next day.
I know. And you guys looked forward to that every year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're a Disney family.
Okay. Now people are going to lose empathy. But yes.
But you're a Disney family.
Yes. And the kids were little. And so that was like the first bump in the road. But then also we all thought this was going to last 2 weeks.
Right.
And it didn't. But I felt a little nuts because I was providing therapy for 55 minutes in between my session and my break. I would come out, scream at the children for them to do their work, to focus, to be quiet, because I'm trying to work, run back to my next session and pretend and be there for my client.
Right.
So that was difficult. As they get older, things are easier. And they understand now what I do and why they need to be quiet. But again, I think it's just like compartmentalizing and really making sure that you have good supervision and knowing your limits and setting boundaries. And sometimes I do hear stories and I get worried for my children that they might encounter these things and helicopter them and yell at them. Michael is the worst victim of this when I hear stories. Then I'm like, you better not do XYZ, and like he gets in trouble, just like having a dream, like a cheating dream.
Bad dreams,
yeah,
yes.
Like how dare you cheat on me in your dream?
Yeah,
yeah, in my dream,
it's an accusation.
Yeah,
it really happened in your
yes.
dream. I
yes.
know. I understand.
Yes. So it's just like boundaries, boundaries, boundaries. I know it's oversaid, but it can't be said enough.
I worry about that a lot with therapists, because mm-hmm. yes, you have your boundaries, but then with therapy, I feel like worlds are really mixing or blending together, right?
Yes.
Not only do you see your patients in your sessions, then there's social media.
Yes.
I don't know. Do you have a rule about connecting with patients on social media?
So they're allowed to follow my professional accounts.
Okay.
Yes. And I'm not, they know I'm not interacting with them, like, on social media. And also, anything that we put on social media is not therapy. So there's, like, disclaimers about that. There's boundaries. Like, if I do see people in the community, they know that there's HIPAA. So if I don't say hi to them, it's because I need them to say hi to me first. And because then they're saying it's okay to say hi. Because if I'm with people or something, people know I'm a therapist. I can't like break confidentiality that way.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Why I always say, have to say hi to my therapist when I see her out of the community before she says anything to me. Yeah. So thank you for explaining that. That makes a lot of sense. And it's for everybody's protection.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Now we're going to get a little bit more personal.
Okay.
Do you feel comfortable talking about your early family life and how that played into you being a therapist and how that still influences you as a therapist today?
Sure. So my parents, so my dad immigrated to the United States when he was 15, and he had to learn the language. He came from Taiwan, where he moved to Taiwan when he was 5 from China after they became during the war. So then he went to Taiwan and at 5, and then he came to the United States at 15. And he met my mom when they were working in New York City. And so from there, I think because both families, and this is, you know, we talk about first generation immigrant and children of immigrants, that they gave up everything to come to the United States, and their parents gave up everything and didn't have time to worry about self-esteem and a gentle parenting and all of that. Your job is to go to school and do whatever you can to make the next generation better, because they gave up everything to come here. I can't even imagine moving to another country and starting all over. So so that's the empathy part, right? Like, that's the knowing where my parents came from part, which took a lot, many years of understanding and my own therapy. With that, corporate punishment was overall accepted, but I would say there was also abuse, to be honest and to be transparent. There was abuse when we were little. And from there, we did go into foster care, and I aged out of the foster care system, and the foster care system was great for me. And they treated me well and gave me opportunities. And I know that's not the same for other people, but I think for the most part, I think it works for people. And because of that, and that was one of the reasons why I knew I just had to go to school. I somehow knew that I just needed to make it to 18 years old. People ask, like, how did you stay so strong and not give up? And I just knew, even if I made it to 18, and even if I was homeless at 18, life was still better than what it was at that time. So, and then I just knew I had to go to school, had to go to college, had to get my master's so that I could be a therapist. And I think I knew that was like the way out of poverty, and like, not that I was in poverty, but I just knew that was the way to get independent.
I was about to say, you might not have been in poverty, but you had to be independent from a very young age.
Yes, yes. So when I was in foster care, and I wanted a car because I was taking the bus to work at McDonald's as a teenager, public transportation. And it's so funny because I haven't thought about this in years. And my kids are almost the age that I was when I took the bus. And I would never allow them to do it. But
things have changed.
Yes, things are different. Yes. Their life is very different than mine. And but I wanted to make money because I wanted the independence.
Right.
So I worked at McDonald's, took the bus. Luckily, like my family of origin were in and out of my life and came in and helped me, I guess, at crucial times. So at the time, a family member gave me some money for a computer. I used part of it for a computer and part of it for like a beater car. And I was able to buy the car. And that car helped me go to my job, high school. I didn't care that I had rust on my doors. I drove it to high school. And then from there, in college, my dad bought me a used car. So that helped me get to jobs in college.
Right.
Because a car definitely is so needed for individuals to be able to be employed and to get out of poverty. That's why there's other programs out there to provide vehicles, because without a vehicle, it is much harder to get out of poverty.
So, right, especially in certain areas,
yes,
right, where
yes.
public transportation is not as accessible.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, it's interesting because in you recounting your childhood, you know, we were friends, best friends. We saw each other every day.
Yes.
We walked to school together. We walked to the bus stop together every day, which is another story for itself. Yeah. But there was so much that you didn't share mm-hmm. at the time. And I just can't imagine like the burden that you are carrying. And I wonder how much of that has also to do with being a child of immigrants of, you know, don't tell people what's going on or like hold,
right.
you know, family secrets or family secrets. Well, I didn't realize until years later mm-hmm. what you had been going through
mm-hmm.
and why you had, you know, the experiences that you had that helped mm-hmm. you eventually become a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's something that to this day, it still bothers me that we didn't know that was happening mm-hmm. to you until far later.
So hopefully that means my clients trust me with everything that they tell me. But I think it's one, Asians, you save face. You don't tell anybody your problems, especially family stuff. But two, as a victim of abuse, you had to keep it quiet. Otherwise, things are worse at home. So there's that too.
Right. And so we hope things are changing for immigrants or children of immigrants where mm-hmm. they are able to, you know, get that help when they need to or be able to speak to others or find a therapist mm-hmm. like yourself where mm-hmm. they feel comfortable confiding in.
Yes.
To share that type of very important information.
Yes.
So I also remember your first car, and I also remember all the hustling you had to do to get everything. And I was always so impressed. And can I just share a little anecdote? You know, whenever I hear from people, you know, telling me their sob stories about little things that might have happened in their life, I always think back to you. And I'm like, you know, just because somebody was mean to you or somebody was maybe you had a bad day at work, that is not a reason to, let's say, quit your job, or that's not a reason to have an extreme reaction. You know, my friend Teresa mm-hmm. has endured so much in her life and has hustled and has made literally more than lemonade. She's made gold out of lemons in her life. So you're always an inspiration for me and always an example for me, for others, as to how to not have obstacles hold them back in life and how to turn it into opportunities.
Thank you. I do have to say, and I'm not saying this only because he's in the room, I met my husband, Michael, when we were 19 years old. And that was, I don't know where I would be. And then not trying to like set the women's movement back 100 years, but I truly don't know where I would be right now if I didn't meet him and his family at 19 when I did, because it was like the first time somebody took care of me, took care of my heart, took care, had empathy. And I didn't think I was going to get teary-eyed because he probably annoyed me this morning. And but yeah, no, it's his family right from the beginning treated me like their own child. And when my car broke down, they were there to help me. When I didn't have money for groceries in college, they bought me groceries. Michael filled me my car with gas without anything in return. So his sister, when I got in a car accident, without question, handed me cash to buy a car, because again, a car you need to finish school, to go to work. And I truly think that it is luck. It's not luck. I remember Oprah saying that it's when preparation meets opportunity. And but I do think it was some sort of divine intervention that we met then. Yeah.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I love Michael too, for many reasons, but the main reason is for how he loves you and how you two are such a good match for each other and support each other. Yeah. You know, that actually reminds me of your wedding day, mm-hmm. when I was Teresa's maid of honor, and the night before your wedding day, you had already been with Michael for how long?
Over 8 years. It was like 8.5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And the night before the wedding day, Teresa and I spent the night together, and she was so giddy about how cute Michael was. So, like, you know, it's just so beautiful for me to see, as your friend, to see how in love you were with him, and how just not just in love, how much you loved this being and how much he loved you back. Mm-hmm. And I'm just very grateful that you have that in your life.
Oh, thank you. So are there any other questions you think that the audience might want to know before we switch gears to you?
If you had any advice for other therapists or for mm-hmm. people who are looking to become therapists, you know, it's very interesting. There are people in my field mm-hmm. who are very interested in classes on the side, and maybe learning how to, you know, how to become a therapist.
Yeah.
Because even in my job, we're talking all day long, we're negotiating, we're helping people. And some people are seeing that maybe therapy is a way for them, or becoming a therapist. What advice would you have for them?
Yeah. I met one of them at your shower, and I was like, please do not. You are a freaking attorney at a pharmaceutical company. Do not.
I know exactly who you're
yes,
talking about.
Do not.
But she's not the only one. There
oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I told her, if you want to do something nice, you could go ahead and volunteer. Do something of that, because truly, so this field, we have a long way to go. Before we get compensated for the trade, for what we do. So people graduate with their bachelor's. I have nieces and nephews who make more than me, who graduate from recently. And this field does not pay. Mm-hmm. So... you'll always have a job. You'll always be able to work. It's needed, but definitely do it. Like you do have to make sure you're doing it for the right reasons. In social work 101, I remember the professor saying, if you're going into this because you want to save people, don't. Because then you're doing it for your own ego, a savior-like complex. because most of the time you won't even see that you're helping people. So do it because you want to plant the seeds. Do it because you hope that one day things can change. Do it because you like the craft, but don't do it because you want to help.
That's great advice. I think what's happening is you're seeing people who, there's a fine balance, right? There's people who have these multiple degrees, maybe have this corporate job, and they're making decent money. And then on the other end, there are people who are hustling and really helping people and maybe not making as much money, but there's got to be a fine balance somewhere. Because I'm noticing the people on the other end, they're feeling like, maybe I don't have this, maybe this isn't my purpose in life.
Yeah.
Right? And money is not solving my problems. It's not bringing me happiness. So no. What can I do that will bring others joy and bring others peace and make yes. more of an impact on the world? So it's interesting because people are trying to find that balance.
Yes. Yeah. And honestly, even starting my own practice, you know, people give me accolades, but I truly couldn't do it without a partner who's a high earner. And a lot of therapists who open their own practice have a partner that's a high earner. So, and that's just being transparent because it's difficult. And the margin of profit is not, you know, a lot, because I also like to pay fairly. But even if I stayed with the market, what the market pays, it's really not a big difference. So you can't do it because you think you're going to make lots of money.
Okay, that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
Thank you for being so transparent.
Yes.
Okay, one final question for
yes.
you. Are you psychoanalyzing me all the time?
No. No, people think that of therapists, right? Or I most of the time, I'm like thinking, oh my gosh, I have such a potty mouth. I hope you're not judging me. And I think like people trust their kids with me, which is great. Please trust your kids with me. But 2 seconds into a car ride, I'm dropping all these like bombs and I'm so sorry. And
that is the Teresa I love.
Yeah. Yeah. And so definitely when I'm not working, I'm happy just to be focused when I am working, let alone off the clock.
Okay. I'm glad that you're not psychoanalyzing me and thinking I'm crazy every day.
No, I just think people think I'm crazy and I can't believe people come see me as a therapist.
We're all crazy in our
yes.
own way.
Yes. Yes, we are.
Well, thank you, Teresa. Thank you for sharing all that information. That's very helpful. And I hope that'll make people feel more comfortable going to therapists.
Yes.
And also be very informative for people who want to become therapists.
Yes, I hope so too. Thank you.
Before we go, Aurora Healing Crew, take a deep breath like you're soaking in sunlight. Warm, steady, grounding. As you move through your day, check in with your gut. Notice how you feel around others. Your energy is precious. Protect it, so you have the strength and light to do what really matters to you. Because life is hard, and we're getting through it together. Thank you for listening to the Aurora Sessions Beyond the Couch. Visit our website at aurorasuncounseling.com to learn more. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Just search Aurora Sun Counseling. Got questions or topics you'd love to hear us cover? Email us at info@aurorasuncounseling.com or drop a comment. We'd love to hear from you.